Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending some time with me today. And listeners, I want you to know our next segment deals with a few tough themes like assault. So we wanted to let you know in case there were any small ears listening or if you might be triggered yourself. So right now, think about this. What constitutes a nightmare for a modern teenager? The movie Cher goes there. Here's the plot. The night after a party, a video was sent around of a high school student who's a low-key, well-liked jock named Mandy, who is in the video. She's unconscious at a party, face down, and boys she knows are all around her while her pants are down. It seems to be sort of a snippet of a bigger event, but that's unclear. Mandy can't remember anything. She only learns about it when her phone blows up with texts from her friends about that texted video. Mandy and her family struggle with the decision to find out what happened and who can be held responsible. And in Mandy's mind, is it worth the toll it takes on her every other part of her life? Here's a clip of Mandy speaking to her dad in a car.
I was drinking a lot. Dad, I was drinking a lot because I wanted to.
Yeah, and you're small, so it's going to be difficult to metabolize that.
I was drinking a lot because I wanted to. Nobody made me. Nobody made me get drunk. Nobody. I just like going to parties and I like hooking up with people. And I've hooked up with a lot of people.
Why are you talking like that?
Because I wanted to. Nobody made me. Nobody made me go.
Jesus,
and nobody
so
made
what?
Me get...
So what? So what? Who gives a what you did? Who gives a what you did, Mandy? Does that give them a right to do whatever they want to you? Does it?
Cher showed at Sundance and Cannes this year, and it premieres on HBO July 27th. It was written and directed by Pippa Bianco, who also directed this Sunday's episode of Euphoria, another project about the grittier part of being part of Generation Z. Pippa, welcome to All of It.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, and correct me if I'm wrong about any of these things. It started as a short film in 2015, which also showed at Cannes. How did it develop into a full-length feature?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I had the idea for the feature film first, actually, and I wasn't sure how I was going to convince people to give me millions of dollars. So, so I made a short version, and yeah, in the course of that, you know, period of time, so many things in the world and in me as a person and a filmmaker have changed. So I would say, you know, the two have a thread in common but are definitely very different.
So in your mind, had you already had the feature film written, but sounds like you had to almost rewrite it given the times?
Yeah, kind of. Well, actually, I only really knew how it would begin and how it would end. That last scene was sort mm-hmm. of what I was writing to, and I didn't know any of the middle bit yet. So I made the short as sort of a slice of time. The short is just her first morning of kind mm-hmm. of figuring out what happened at school. And that's it. That's the only period of time the short film occupies. And then the feature obviously is a much, much larger spread of experience and time.
Not knowing, the unknown is a big, big part of this film. Mandy doesn't necessarily know what happened. They're trying to figure out what happened. And because the video is unclear and it's only part of something that's bigger, there's this big search to figure out what actually happened. How did you arrive at this idea that the unknown was going to be such an important part of this, telling this kind of story?
That's a great question. Yeah, you know, I think part of it certainly comes just from the fact that I love mystery films, you know, and I think a lot of the fascinating part of storytelling is what's left out, what you don't hear, what you mm-hmm. don't say, and what you don't see, because I think that's also how you make narratives in your life, you know, like I may be having a conversation with you now and have to piece together from the anecdotes I do or don't know what your story might have been before this moment, you know, mm-hmm. that a lot of making those inferences just being a human in the world. So that was part of it, maybe from just a storytelling perspective, but also from a human perspective. I tend to think that, like, you know, of the people in my life who've been through something like what Mandy goes through in the film, you know, there's the question I think of, like, is something more traumatic if you remember it or if you don't? You know, which is worse, mm-hmm. maybe. But for a lot of people, they don't really have access to those, that memory and that experience. And there's also the difficulty of processing that experience itself, you know, being in the world, going through that, whether it did or didn't happen. So to me, the film was actually more about, you know, it's unclear whether something did or didn't happen right. to her. It is much more about how difficult it is for her to navigate everybody's else's reaction to it.
One of the things that's in the film, and it's a really interesting filmmaking device, is that texts are constantly going off in the film, whether or not they're about this particular video. You hear the pings. I actually thought, for a minute, I thought, is my phone on? The first time when I was watching it. Why did you do that? What were you trying to tell us, the viewer?
Another great question. I mean, I personally have like a phobia of my cell phone, so sometimes I wonder if that's where the whole movie came from. Yeah. Like when I hear even the vibrate sound, I'm like, you know, like I get a surge of anxiety. Like,
you're listening to All of It on WNYC. My guest is Pippa Bianco. We're talking about her movie Cher, which premieres on HBO on July 27th. Somebody asked me one of the scariest things to me ever professionally. I said to see the word trending next to my name.
Yes.
Because it's so terrifying, that yeah. idea. And in the film, these pings and pings are going off. And you were saying that you were really scared of that as well.
Definitely. Yeah, I think I when I hear my own phone vibrate or ring, that my immediate thought is what I have forgotten to do. So, yeah, I think I feel so much anxiety hearing a phone buzz constantly that, you know, I think to me also, I thought in this particular story, that is the thing that's haunting her. That's really the only piece she does have, is this tiny snippet that's on a cell phone. And so that is sort of like the ghost that's always there, you know, when you hear those sounds.
Her parents are incredibly supportive in the film, and they're really active. They're the ones that really want her to talk about this and go to the authorities. Why did you want them to be so active?
You know, I thought that, especially in terms of like how the world has changed since I made the short and made the feature, that like, you know, I mean, in general, I'm more interested in movies that are about human beings, and a lot of the times human beings are good, and even when they're good and have the best intentions, you know, things go wrong, there's pain, they hurt each other. And I'm more interested in that than in sort of like black and white villains. Mm-hmm. Like, I do think most people moving through the world are really trying to do their best and really trying to do the right thing. But horrible things happen all the time. So I was more interested in that sort of story.
Let's take a listen to a clip. This is Mandy and her mom talking about what happened.
Do you blame me?
Blame you? Honey, I could never blame you.
And Dad?
Not him either. You have to remember, it's different for him. He thinks this is not normal. I knew things like this happen. I know things like this happen to someone every minute of every day. And I know they happen here. But he didn't know that. Because he didn't have to. So I knew exactly what to do, and I knew I could do that for you.
And that's such an interesting point in the film about the mom and the dad having different emotional reactions. He wants to protect, and he's so shocked, and the mom is just horrified that this has finally come to their home.
Mm.
And I'm curious about the family too, because was it always intentional? It's a biracial family.
Mm-hmm.
Was that intentional, or these were the actors who came aboard?
Yeah, no, I think decided first, we had the freedom really to cast whoever was right for Mandy, the leading, our young lead. And so I had said to myself, like, this story takes place in America now, you know, in my town, in Long Island, at least. Like, I think our public school is you know, 40% Latino and a huge percentage ESL. And like, that's beautiful. That's America now. So I feel like if you're telling a truthful story about teenagers, they're often going to be non-white. Mm-hmm. So we had open casting, and Rianne was just the most incredible performer. So then we built out her family around her. We cast the parents after we cast Rianne, and Rianne, that's, you know, Rianne is biracial, so.
My guest is Pippa Bianco. The name of the film is Cher, and it's premiering on HBO on July 27th. You said you always had this idea for this story in your mind, and, you know, we've heard these news stories. There was a sort of a famous case in Ohio of two boys who filmed an assault on a girl and then sent it around. Were you aware of those stories? Did you go down sort of a nerdy research, you know, rabbit hole?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think important. I think all films, whether you intend for them to be or not, are political. So, you know, I personally like to be aware of what's happening in the world when I'm making a story. And also, first and foremost, I wanted this film to be for people who, you know, whose lived experience this touched on. So I thought it was, you know, my responsibility as a filmmaker to not only be aware of the stories, but to speak with people who might be interested or willing to speak with me about their experience. So yeah, there were like, I think about 37 cases that were similar to what Mandy goes through that I was actively following. And then there were five girls who agreed to speak with me and who I was interviewing for the film. So, and their families and brothers, and then, you know, the various people in their orbits whose experience would relate to the film.
What's something from those conversations that we see in the film?
That's so interesting. Well, you know, I mean, I think truly the family's experience, you know, I didn't, to some degree, like I had an immediate awareness of what a person going through this would be like, you know, as a woman who was in high school, you know, that I think a lot of us are only one degree or less from an experience like that. So there was obviously my personal lens, but I didn't actually, you know, I'm not a parent. I didn't have, I think, the access to how trauma ripples through a family and changes everybody's relationships, you know, not just the person who's at the epicenter, but everybody who loves them. So,
and one of the most difficult things to think about in this film, and Mandy is really not sure she wants to come forward, and all that happens when, and all that doesn't happen when she comes forward. Were you trying, you know, I'm curious, did you have a personal opinion about it?
Yeah.
And did that influence the filmmaking at all?
You know, my personal opinion was that, you know, if most people, you know, even in this moment in time, when I think it tends to seem easier than it might be to come forward publicly, the vast majority, most people are making, the vast majority of choices is to not come forward or to not disclose. And so I guess, like, as a question I had for myself in making the film was, like, if that is the choice people are making, why? Why might that be? And also, I think, you know, I really wanted to, you know, I'd worked as a hotline operator for RAIN when I was in college. And, you know, like, the most salient piece of training for me was, like, you do not give advice. You can offer resources and support, but fundamentally, it's your job to listen and figure out what people want and help them get whatever it is they want, you know, that, like, you cannot know, no matter what someone's going through. You know, I think it's very easy to say, like, oh, if it were me, if I were in this situation, I'd never do this, I'd do this, I, you know, like, but you have no idea what it feels like, no matter how empathetic you are. So to me, I think it was important to make a film that dignified that choice and also showed that, you know, to me, I think, yes, it's heroic to be an advocate and an activist. That's an incredible burden to bear for others, but it's also heroic to just get out of bed every day and live your life the way you want to, whatever that means for you. So,
what made you volunteer at RAIN?
You know, I think activism is like an important part of any life well lived, you know, and like just feels good. This is a lame answer, but it's the truth. You can do it at any time of day, you know, so you can log on. Sure. You know, most support, I think a lot of support now is online, you know, so you just log in at like 2 in the morning or 9 a.m. or, you know, like whatever time window you have. And that's, you know, that was a little bit more conducive to a college student's life. So
sometimes it's interesting in the film that it hit me in an interesting way, because when one of the young guys in the film is, when she confronts him about the video and what happened, he's sort of shocked that she's upset. And his quote is like, "It's funny. Come on, that was funny." And that would be his reaction. Did you talk to young men at all? You said you talked to people who were survivors. Did you talk to young men?
I did. Yeah, I did. I think, you know, to me, I think it's also really tempting, I think, in movies, certainly, to reduce stories to their most black and white form. You know, this person's good and this person's bad, and that's... but to me, like, if these things are happening on the scale they're happening on, it can't all be evil people. You know, like, there must be something that is allowing people to mistreat each other like this that is not as easy as just creating a scapegoat of, like, oh, that guy is the problem or that girl's the problem. If we just get rid of them, we won't have people hurting each other like this anymore. So it was important to me, I think, to try to talk to perpetrators as well and figure out why people do this to each other and why it's so easy for people to dehumanize each other.
He's so bewildered.
Yeah, and again, I don't think that excuses his behavior.
But it's interesting.
Yeah, I hope that doesn't sound like what I'm saying. I think, you know, and also, like, you know, when I was a drunk college student, you know, like, there were a lot of things that seemed funny, you know, and there was a level of, like, pranking and humiliation that is, you know, the line is really thin between what, you know, what you're on the inside of or the outside of, you know, when you think, oh yeah, we're all in on this joke, or you're, you know, and so again, like, I don't think that excuses any behavior, but I think it's human behavior, even if it's really hurtful. And so, yeah.
In the film, you show her going to a therapy. It's EMDR?
That is correct, yeah.
Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, I mean, that's also something that came from interviews with a lot of the girls, that was something that made, like, a lot of meaningful change in their well-being was to do EMDR, and I have a lot of friends who've done it. It's mostly for PTSD, in my understanding, but you either use light or sound, but mostly they use light or I'm making a finger waving motion.
Like a strobing.
But something that allows your eyes to track back and forth rapidly. And that sort of is, like, part of helping you reprocess memories. For whatever reason, that, you know, engages people in, like, a meditative way and allows them to, you know, feel better. So.
The name of the film is Cher, and it's premiering on HBO on July 27th. Pippa, before you go, you also... you directed the forthcoming Euphoria?
Yes, this Sunday.
You're diving into gritty teen stuff. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. My episode 6 is follows McKay, so Algie's storyline. And then, you know, obviously continues through everybody else's, but a lot of football scenes.
My guest has been Pippa Bianco. The name of the film is Cher. It is on HBO on July 27th at 10 p.m. Thanks for coming to the studio.
Thanks so much for having me.
And listeners, a note to say that the sexual assault organization RAIN, the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, has a 24-hour hotline. We have a former volunteer here. Its number is 1-800-656-4673. That's 1-800-656-4673. Coming up next, the creative team behind the musical adaptation of The Secret Life of Bees. Stay with us. More after the break.